listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Today is Wednesday, August 26th, 2009. And this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Senator Edward Kennedy died yesterday, leaving America fresh out of true statesmen.
From colony collapse to economy collapse. Oregon's beekeepers are key players in the agriculture game.
And the Portland police are making a list, checking it twice. They're going to find out if you're naughty or nice, and then they're going to keep it a secret.
Portland area weather today, clear, temperatures in the mid-80s. Tonight, clear, lows mostly in the 50s. And tomorrow, clear with highs up into the low 90s inland.
And first, we go to regional news from around Cascadia. Oregon's self-image may be green, but our earth, water, and air are anything but. We've dosed ourselves and the other creatures with which we share the environment with lethal levels of herbicides, pesticides, and chemical fertilizers. Because much of the toxic storm is colorless and odorless, it's easy to ignore until we see the effects. Beekeepers in Oregon, and indeed nationwide, report increasing instances of colony collapse. Officials remain vague as to the actual causes of the syndrome. My guest today is John Jacobs, president of the Southern Oregon Beekeepers Association. Good morning, John. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning.
Well, first off, what effects do you see herbicides and pesticides having on bee colonies?
Well, they're twofold. They result in some nutritional stress and some lethal and sublethal stresses on hives. Nutritionally, you know, application of herbicides and things of that nature, you know, reduce forage that are available to them. And then on major industrial crops, there's a lot of pesticides, systemic and otherwise, that are used to keep pests at bay, but they also affect non-target species like our pollinators.
And so Oregon being generally considered an agricultural state, though urban areas seem to be encroaching more and more on farmland, what effects do bees have on Oregon's economy?
Well, they're huge. You know, in Oregon, we pollinate a lot of pears, cherries, apples, raspberries, blueberries, cranberries, vegetables. You know, the list goes on and on. You know, as the pollinator habitat is lost with development, it becomes very important that we plant the right species to help support our pollinators, native and otherwise.
And what link, if any, have you seen between the use of herbicides and pesticides and this colony collapse syndrome, they call it?
Well, there's still much contentious debate about the role of some of these pesticides. One of the main suspects are the neonicotinoids, which are systemically applied, so they get throughout the plants, and the pesticide can be secreted in the nectar and pollen. There's been studies that show that there's sublethal effects, and it's not enough to outright kill the bee, but there's only so many sublethal effects you can ask a hive to have to withstand. They've shown that it affects the bee's learning and memory, which affects their ability to forage. And if they're already stressed due to, you know, loss of habitat and climate change and other things, you know, one more sublethal straw on the camel's back is often just enough to tip them over the edge.
So I know listeners will want to find out more about this, and probably beekeeping in general. There's more and more interest in urban beekeeping these days. Where can listeners go to find out more?
Well, there's a couple great websites. The Oregon State Beekeepers Association has a website where there's a forum where you can learn about local beekeeping. There's beesource.com, which is more of a national and international, but you know, there's a lot of urban beekeepers get on there and discuss their experiences. And we're also working on starting a website called plantingforpollinators.com, excuse me, and we're going to promote people planting suitable types of pollinator forage for their landscaping, and that will help take away some of the pressure from all the development, because, you know, lawns and driveways and parking lots don't provide much food for our pollinators.
And of course, your own undertaking, All Soul Apiary, that people can go online at and find out more of what they can order from your company. Is that correct?
Yes, we specialize in producing queens. We're striving to produce disease-resistant queens. There's a some pesticides are actually applied by beekeepers to the hives because there's problems with some parasites. But through genetic screening and selecting tolerant strains, we're working on reducing the need for those applications in the hive. And I would strongly encourage anybody who has an interest in honeybees to consider taking it on as a hobby, because the more people we have participating, the faster we can identify, tolerant strains.
Thank you so much for that. My guest has been John Jacobs, president of the Southern Oregon Beekeepers Association. Thanks again, John.
Thank you very much.
Here we have a quintessentially American problem. A new Seasons was scheduled to open yesterday on Hawthorne. It was planned as a boutique branch brimming with local produce, meats. High-end shoppers are hungry for that stuff. And then the bank stopped lending. To get financing, the supermarket chain now has to upgrade from 10,000 square feet with 17 parking slots to 17,000 square feet with room for 37 vehicles on a second-story roof. So because money's tight, the store has to be bigger.
How does that work? Back in January, the ACLU challenged Portland police over a secret list of petty criminals who've been arrested most often downtown. Attorneys for the ACLU asked exactly how that list of drug and property crime suspects is compiled and why it's secret. The Portland Police Bureau and prosecutors argued that the list is constitutional and has proven effective at reducing repeat offenses. Today, the secret list is going for approval at City Hall. City Council is poised to pass almost $1 million for the Service Coordination Team. That's the secret list program. This program is item number 1234 on their agenda. And look out, it's coming around about 10:30, possibly 11:30 a.m. today at the City Hall, at the City Council meeting. And I want to just say thanks, Joe, anybody, for that story on Indy Media.
Yesterday in Manhattan, a judge ordered federal regulators to explain why they didn't investigate whether executives at Bank of America misled shareholders about bonuses paid by Merrill Lynch. At issue is Bank of America's failure to disclose the bonuses to shareholders. The payment of the bonuses itself didn't violate the security laws, but it would have if the SEC hadn't been asleep at the wheel for over 10 years. Merrill ended up paying $3.6 billion in bonuses last year, even though it lost nearly $28 billion that year, a record for the firm.
In other words, if you can get away with it, it's legal. Well, this is a real head-scratcher. Oregon is losing ground when it comes to getting students ready for college, according to SAT scores for the high school class of 2009. Average scores on the test, designed to measure how well students do as college freshmen, were lower than they've been in years. Apparently, kids can't write, and they're even worse at math. But even a cursory look at American cultural deep structure reveals that there's a strong anti-intellectual current and an equally robust effort to emphasize training over education.
So many businesses are getting tax subsidies under Oregon's promotion of alternative energy that the state now estimates it will spend $167 million on them between now and 2011. The higher spending demonstrates the increasing popularity of Oregon's business energy tax credit. But it comes when other state programs face cutbacks, and that's giving some lawmakers the screaming willies. But it doesn't matter. Whatever's paid out now in subsidies to the techno-fixers is nothing compared to what it'll cost us for our failure to stop the problems at their source.
Here's one person who is actually addressing the problems at their source. We've talked recently about how we are way past anything like a carbon footprint. We are now in a realm where it only matters what you do with your hands. It's your handprint that makes a difference. My guest this morning has truly and deeply been involved in hands-on ways to address climate change for many, many years. Kenny Arcebell is the CEO and founder of Bioneers. He's an award-winning social entrepreneur, author, journalist, and filmmaker. And Bioneers is a nationally recognized nonprofit dedicated to disseminating practical and visionary solutions for restoring Earth's imperiled ecosystems. Restoring, not sustaining, because we don't want to sustain what we got now, and practical as well as visionary. Good morning, Kenny. Thank you so very much for being with us today.
It's my pleasure, and hello to all you wonderful Oregonians.
So talk a little bit about Bioneers and what you actually, this is a hands-on get out and do something about climate change and the environment endeavor that you have going. And you've been doing this for some time. Can you briefly describe to listeners what Bioneers is all about?
Well, it's hard to be brief on that because we do a number of things. You know, we're best known for the annual conference that we have in the Bay Area, which is coming up October 16th to the 18th. And we do satellite conferences around the country as well in local sites. And I believe there's one in Oregon this year. So I hope that there is. And, you know, we do a lot of communications and education basically around solutions. And then we have a number of other programs. But what I thought I would tell you about today is something that hasn't really been talked about publicly yet. We're doing, you know, we believe local work is tremendously important. You know, the politician Tip O'Neill once said, all politics is local. And from a similar point of view, all ecology is also local at the end of the day. We all live with a watershed and a food shed and an energy shed. And it's our conviction that local communities are really taking the greatest steps at this time to change how we live on Earth and really shift our systems. So we started a project in our own backyard where we're based in New Mexico called Dreaming New Mexico to try to look at how the entire state could take a systemic approach to restoration. And the one tool that we're using for that are what we call future maps. And we did our first one on the age of renewables. The year is 2020. We've done everything right. What would the age of renewable energy look like in New Mexico? And there's a very beautiful map and a lot of technical maps as well as an in-depth booklet that lay out the vision. And it's a dream, but it's a doable dream. It's very pragmatic and reality-based and huge amount of research behind it. And we've had tremendous good fortune moving it into the political sphere and have actually had significant influence in how the state is now approaching renewable energy and the transition to a fossil-free future. And what we're doing now is we're working on a second map, which is called The Age of Localized Food Sheds and Fair Trade. Because one of the things that we discovered in our research, which I'm sure some of your listeners have thought a lot about, is that even in a best-case scenario for a local food economy, you're always going to have trade. You know, here in New Mexico, there are all kinds of things we can't grow. I don't think people are ready to give up coffee and bananas, frankly. So the second issue, apart from a very much more localized food system, is really fair trade. How do we trade with other communities and other countries that are observing minimum standards of what is not only good production, but also social equity? So anyway, we'll have that in October, and we're very excited to release it into the world.
And we, of course, it's a challenge to Oregon to come up with a similar program. Kenny, thank you so much for that. That's all the time we have for just a note to listeners. I want to invite Mr. Arcebell to come back for a longer program in the very near future to talk about Bioneers deep structure and what the organization has been doing over the years. It's a very, very exciting project. And again, I want to thank my guest very much for being with us this morning, Kenny Arcebell, founder of Bioneers. Thank you so much for that.
Thanks. Come to the conference.
Indeed.
Okay.
Senator Edward Kennedy died late last night. Kennedy was a rallying point for those in his party and an object of derision for Republican opponents. His affability and his ability to span the partisan divide prompted an outpouring of condolences from those in the GOP and the Democratic Party. Legislators on both sides of the aisle jostled to get out in front with the accolades, remembrances, and in some cases what appeared to be genuine grief. Whatever else Kennedy's passing means, America has lost one of its last true statesmen.
Briefly, here's one thing that it means. This changes the health care debate in ways that are really foreseeable, but also surprising. Tomorrow, we will be having independent journalist David Rosenfeld with us to discuss what the implications are, political and otherwise. That's all we have time for today.
This has been Air Cascadia for Wednesday, August 26, 2009. Engineering is Kate Welch. Trillium Shannon is the KABU AM News and Public Affairs Director, while Kathleen Stevenson is on sabbatical. The editor is Chris Andre, and I'm Liam Delta.
You're listening to All Natural, free-range, non-syndicated KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Your support, and your support only, keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Stay tuned for Flashpoints, a report from Honduras on the investigation by the Spanish judge who indicted Pinochet. Israel bombs southern Gaza, Obama's declaration in support of a necessary war in Afghanistan, and the United Native Americans try to take back Mount Rushmore.
Thanks for listening and have a good day.